Good morning, everyone. So what happens when a sefer is written and the purpose or a purpose of the writing of the sefer is to tell us a historical story? So usually we fill out the background of the story to appreciate the sefer. And the Mechaber, the author of the sefer, is writing the sefer for the purpose of teaching Torah. We're here, we're not historians, I'm not a historian. We're here to study Torah. For those who are just joining us, there are seats over here. Come, go in. There's packets over here. So we're not studying history books, we're studying Svarim. But what happens when a Mechaber, a great Gaon, writes a sefer with the express purpose of telling us about the life in which the drama of halacha, so to speak, is being played out? And that's what we're going to learn together today. We're going to introduce a sefer, and we'll see in the introduction that the purpose of this sefer is to give us a window into a world that is no longer. But at the same time, you could argue, this world, in a certain sense, is more alive or as alive as it was when it was written at that time. And it gives us an opportunity to connect to a channel in Avodas Hashem, in our own community, in our own Masor, in our own way, that is crucial for us. It's so important. So that's going to be the question. And so the journey of this question actually begins in a very interesting place, in that part of what this remembrance or this connection is being built is not just around an individual, but around an institution. Ah, thank you. L'chaim. L'chaim, l'chaim. I didn't have a drink yet this morning. It's gavaldik. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shachlanu Midvaro. Ah, gavaldik. Gavaldik. Thank you. Nothing better than a good hot chocolate. If you don't drink coffee, then that's all. So the story really is the story, Bigadol, of an institution. An institution that was founded on the first day of Cheshvan in 1873 in a city called Berlin. Now in 1860, Jews had civic equality in Berlin. In 1890, the Jewish population of Berlin is over 100,000 people. And there have been Jews living in Berlin for centuries, at the heart of Germany. This institution, which is inaugurated in Cheshvan in October of 1873, is unique. It is distinct. It is later known historically as the Hildesheimer Seminary, the Beis Medrash LeRabbanim of Berlin, and it is opened by its founder, the great Gaon Rav Azriel Hildesheimer. Now, today, yes?
Before the war, how many yeshivas were there and how many were ever replaced?
So, 1 second. We're still early. We're still just getting started, 1873. In 1925, the Jewish population of Berlin is over 170,000. There were many. We've talked over the weeks. We had the map last week. We've talked about Eastern European yeshivas. So in the middle of the 19th century, Volozhin was Ir Ve'im B'Yisrael. And then there were others we've spoken about, Slabodka and Mir. But now we have a yeshiva which is founded in a different context. It's founded by Rav Azriel Hildesheimer, who was in his own right unquestionably a tremendous Talmudic figure, a Torah giant. Now he, before coming to Berlin to serve as the Rosh Yeshiva, the founding Rosh Yeshiva, the Beis Medrash Rabbanim of Berlin, he was a shul rav, a community rav in Eisenstadt in Hungary, and he was a student himself. He was a student of the Binyan Sion Rav Yaakov Tzvi Ettlinger, and also of Chacham Bernays. Those two great German Rabbanim had another student at the same time who was also quite distinguished, who had a similar philosophy on Torah Judaism. His name was, anybody know?
Eliezer Berkowitz.
Eliezer Berkowitz is the Talmud of the person we're going to talk about today.
Okay, sorry.
A generation later. Who was that? That's right. So Rav Yaakov Ettlinger and Chacham Bernays had two star Yekeshe Talmidim. That was Rav Hirsch and Rav Hildesheimer. Now, they differed subtly. There's an amazing article, if you want, on Rav Hildesheimer and Rav Hirsch. It is in, I didn't see Rock City in your packet today because it's 129 pages, but you can get it online. Dr. Lyman has an article called Responses to Modernity, something like that, on LymanLibrary.com. You go to the bottom, you press on, so he has a section there in the back of this article, a whole section on Rav Azriel Hildesheimer, who was not such a well-known giant, but later Acharonim referred to him with incredibly honorific terms. So Rav Azriel Hildesheimer was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and he's living at the same time as Rav Hirsch, and he's living in Hungary, and then he's called by a group of Jews to Berlin to start a yeshiva. He leads the yeshiva for about the first quarter century. After he passes away, he is succeeded by another great Talmudic giant who is known in the world of the yeshivas as the author of the Malamed Lahoel, the Shilas and Tshuvas Malamed Lahoel, authored by Rav David Zvi Hoffman. Rav David Zvi Hoffman is the succeeding Rosh Yeshiva to Rav Azriel Hildesheimer. He dies in 1921. In 1921, they hire another young, illustrious Talmudic scholar from Eastern Europe, but he dies very young. He lasts in the yeshiva for 3 years. He passes away very early in life. And then in 1924, they promote from within the yeshiva a new Rosh Yeshiva, and the man is known as Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. That is the trajectory of the yeshiva, as you were alluding to. This yeshiva succeeds and thrives and flourishes until 1938, when the Germans close the yeshiva. What distinguishes this yeshiva is that although many of its Talmidim had previously or would, someone like Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, for example, would study in traditional, what we could call, Litvische yeshivas. And when you say Litvische yeshivas here, you mean literally yeshivas in Lita, where it was exclusively Talmud, Gemara, you know, maybe a little bit of Torah Shebaal Peh, like we mentioned once, the Nitziv gave a Chumashir on the Parsha. Some yeshivas, they introduced what we call Musar, so ethical teachings, like a study of Rabbeinu Yonah or Mesil Sisharim, learning like that. But this was a different kind of yeshiva. This yeshiva included the critical study of Tanakh, the study of Hebrew grammar. It was a different type of yeshiva in terms of the balance of emphasis that was placed on the kind of limud and the fact that the students, they were encouraged to get secular educations. So if you look, just inside cover, there was an amazing article on the Hildesheimer Academy, published in 1967. It's the Leo Beck yearbook number 12, and it has an article here. It's called Reminiscences of the Berlin Rabbinical Seminary by Issy Jacob Eisner. And I gave you on the first page just two pictures from this article. The first one you see is a picture of the seminary, the Talmidim and the Rabbeim. And the next page are the Rabbeim. And these are very well-known German rabbinic families. Orbach, Wolgemuth, and then you see on the top left, Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, and then on the bottom left, Rav David Zvi Hoffman, the Malamed Lahoel. So this is the institution which is being venerated and remembered through the Sefer that we're going to learn today. Who is the author of this Sefer? The author of this Sefer that we're going to study today is the man on the top left of this four picture set up, Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. Now, I only read snippets of it, I didn't get through the whole book. There is a biography of Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg published by Mark Shapiro. Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg was born in 1884 in, I hate to do this, but I'm going to butcher this Polish name, Czechowicz, I think. I don't know how to pronounce this. Near Grodno. In 1901, he goes to study in Slobodka, and he studies in Mir, and he is instantly recognized as one of the great lights in the world of the yeshivas. He went to Grodno to study Russian literature, and Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel, the prior Nosson Zvi Finkel, chased after him because everybody was trying to convince him not to go into the world of academia, to stay in the world of learning, because he was such a bright light, he was such a giant. But his life was complicated, and in many respects it was tragic. In 1906, he went to become a Rav in a town called Pavishki, something like that. But the deal with going to this town was that to become the Rav of the town goes along the daughter of the prior rabbi of the town. And that was not a good arrangement. They separated after a short period of time, and then ultimately they divorced, and Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg never remarried and never had any children. In 1914, he's going to Germany for medical reasons. He had poor health for the entirety of his life. And in 1919, he enrolls in the University of Berlin and then in the University of Gießen, where he ultimately becomes a lecturer. He earns a PhD and becomes a teacher, a professor. And then in 1924, as we mentioned before, when the successor to Rav David Zvi Hoffman passes away, so as he is in Berlin and teaching, he becomes the Rosh Yeshiva of the Hildesheimer Rabbinical Seminary, the Beis Medrash LeRabbanim in Berlin. That's the story. Ad Kan, the background. So we'll get to that in a second. So what is the Sefer that we're learning today? So now turn the page. Our Sefer today, this is the edition published by Mossad Rav Kook, but there's another publication of this work. It's called Sridiyesh, Shailos and Tshuvas, Chidushim Ubiurim. Take this, a bunch. Take anybody else needs in the back. Sridiyesh, which literally means, what does it literally mean? What's that?
Something fire.
Something fire, what does it mean?
Remnants.
Sarit, that's right. Remnants of the fire. Because you could already imagine where the story goes. As the head of the Beis Medrash LeRabbanim in Berlin in the 1930s. And he begins his Sefer I put them in A, B, and C. On page A, after the Shaar Blat, he says, I have to thank God. At the beginning of the Sefer, and this gives us the end of the background, so to speak, the end of the personal narrative of Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. He says, I have to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which in his tremendous mercy on line number 2, Hotzieni Be'ito Migermania Eretz HaDamim. He took me out of Germany, Umeir Berlin, that became Shehofcha Bimei Sholton HaRasha, that became the capital of national or world international evil. So now you're starting to put together the fragments of his life. When I was in captivity, Begeto Havarsha. First he was in Warsaw. Because he went, after the yeshiva closed in 1938, he traveled to Warsaw. There was actually a movement. People were interested in becoming the chief rabbi of the Jewish community in Warsaw at the outbreak of the war. He was one of many great Gaonim and Gedolim who were there. And then, Ubamachane Harikuz Bigermania. He went to a concentration camp, a work camp, which was a great salvation for him, Baruch Hashem, because most of the Jews in Warsaw did not merit to go to a labor camp. How did he end up in a labor camp? Because when he was in Warsaw, he was identified as Russian because of his original nationality. So he was actually sent from Warsaw to Germany with a group of Soviet prisoners. So he spent the war, the rest of the war from 1941, late 1941, in a German labor camp for Russians, which is amazing that he was not identified as Jewish and sent with the other Jews. So he spends the war, as he tells you, in a Machane Rikus, in a concentration camp in Germany. Hitzilani Barachamov Haravim Bimei Baratskim. He saved me from the hands of the murderers. Rotzchei Amenu Umashmide Rov Binyana Shal Yadus Hagola. And those who destroyed the majority, the vast majority, Yehei Shmo Hagola Mavorach. Line number five. He says, Ani Hagever Roni B'Shevet Shevet Evroso. He says, I saw everything. Avarti Kol Meduri Hatofes. I passed through all of the levels of hell, Hanatzi, Yamach Shemam, and many awful things happened to me. With my own eyes, line number six, Bimo Eini Ra'isi Esmasa Haretza Hashod Vachama Shorishi Olama Arurim. I saw with my own eyes, because you can imagine he's living in the Warsaw ghetto. He saw with his own eyes this great gon, this Rosh Hashiva, the Retzach, the murder, the plundering, the cruelty of the Rishay Olam Ho Arurim, Maisa Achzarius, the cruelty, Vita'alule Resha Umirma Beso Chomas Hageto, Umaisa To'eva Venival Bamachane Osarikuz. I saw everything, Asher Lo Niru Kimoem Miyom Bro Hashem Shemaim Va'aretz. He says, there has never been in the history of humanity the level of depravity, of cruelty, of horror than what I saw with my own eyes in the ghetto and in the camps. He says, I saw in the debasement, line number nine, b'shiflusam shel bnei adam, in the debasement of humanity, netulei matzpun enoshi, they had absolutely zero, no conscience, no conscience, nothing, not a shred of humanity left within them. Asher achzariyusam ola kama monim alzu shel chai soteref, that their cruelty was manyfold that of wild beasts. Yasar yisrani kol liros beinuyim ha'ayumim shel meos alfei achenu bnei Yisrael. I saw with my own eyes the terrible suffering of hundreds of thousands of our brothers of Israel before they were redeemed. Al yidei hachnasasam lekivshani ha'esh v'te hagaz v'nirtzachu b'misa sreifa herug v'chemes v'lamo v'slona sanani. The Rabbon Shalom didn't give me to death. But not only was it the experience and the destruction, but it's also his world. Go to line 14. Ruban kekulan shel kilos Yisrael shenimchu nishmedu v'nichlu me'al admas Europa merkazit hatzvonis v'adromis nochach tevach shel sheishes mi'olei nefesh mi'Yisrael. The eradication, the destruction of the 6 million Yamach Shemam by the Germans. V'nochach hatavir ha'gedol ha'no rayuma sheba nisri v'chaim gedolei ha'uma ge'onea kedoshev v'tzadikea rabonea v'roshi yeshivoseah. He says, who was, in addition to all the plain Jews, the wonderful Achinu B'nai Yisrael, who were destroyed by the hands of these cruel beasts, was the loss of the great tzaddikim, the great scholars, the great leadership, a.k.a. his whole world. All of his colleagues, all of his friends, his whole life's work to build a yeshiva, to build a world of Torah. All gone, right? Both in Germany and from where he had come. All of his Eastern European milieu, which he appreciated greatly. It's all gone. He says, I don't think I got here because of a great tzchus, but I have to say, line number 19, Chovas hoda hu chok. I don't know why I was saved. Not because I'm such a great somebody, he writes. Which, by the way, he was. But he says, I have to thank God for being saved. V'chein alai lahodas l'Hashem she'echiyanu v'kimanu v'higiyani l'ros sifri zeh mofia l'or olam. So what is the Sefer? It's Sri De'esh. Karasi Yishmo, line 21, Sri De'esh ki kishmo keinu. It is just a remnant, says Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. I have to tell you, he says, I had so many Chidushei Torah. I had so many things that were written. I had so many tshuvas. And what happened to them? They're all gone. They're all destroyed. What do I have for you? I have for you a little bit. A tiny shtickle. Chavila Achas, line 27. Nitzla al yedei tamidi hayaka ravagon gadol b'torah v'mada doctor Eliezer Berkovitz, who is Achshav Meshamish Karav, line 29, Bebeis Medrash HaGadol Torah be Chicago. This Tshuva Sefer was published in the 1960s. First two volumes he published, Rav Yaakov Weinberg, when he's in Switzerland, which we'll get to in a second. But he says, my Talmud, my close Talmud, Eliezer Berkovitz, I gave him a stack of papers, and he was Mosa Nefesh for them. He escaped to England, and during the bombing of England, he kept on the Sfarim. He took them to America. He kept them all the while. And then, when he found out that I was still living in Switzerland, he sent me the papers. It was a tremendous mess, and I did the best that I could to organize them. So he says, this file that you're looking at, this UDH, many of these papers come from before the war that were saved in this also incredibly heroic story, which we're not going to talk about today. It's just unbelievable. This itself was saved. So then Rav Weinberg, yeah.
It says, if I'm reading this correctly, the Beit Midrash HaGadol, the Torah of the Chicago. Which Beit Midrash HaGadol was
that? HTC.
I don't know. I'm not a Chicago.
Neither am I, but that's what they tell me.
Yeah. So everybody here knows that. Okay.
I think it's called Beis Medrash LaTorah, but that's what he's referring to. That's exactly it. I don't know at that time if it was on the west side, on Douglas Boulevard.
It was both on the west side, and then he moved when the Yeshiva moved to Skokie in 1956.
So that's when he was here. So he says, this is what you have. This is the little bit that I have left. But you could tell Nebuch, what a heartbreak. He had one very close disciple, very, very close disciple, who survived. His name was Rav Shol Weingort. And I have a sefer here, sefer called Yad Shaul, which is a sefer zikaron for Harav, Dr. Shaul Weingort, put together by Rav Weinberg, as well as another German Rav, Pinchas Bieberfeld. And in the introduction of this, which is very amazing, he goes much more in depth to what his experiences was like during the war. But he had a close friend, this Rav Shol Weingort, who was killed in a train accident. A train accident. So it's a terrible loneliness, lo aleinu, that he experienced in his life. So he gets to Montereau, which is a small community in Switzerland. They have a small community there. He has a few Talmidim. But it's a tragic story. It's a tragic story. But when people hear that he survived, there are letters that are sent to him from around the world. Because this Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg is a remnant and one of the last great Gaonim from pre-war Europe. Right, so how many people survived? How many?
And he was the one who healed help.
Yes, exactly. So part of the reason that he stayed in Switzerland was because, I think it was for health reasons, but Bikaron, a part of the reason was also, I think he didn't want to get involved in Machlokas, because after he died, his Levaya took the Aron to Israel, and there was a huge fight. There was, I don't know exactly the details, but some kind of fist fight broke out at the Levaya. Where should he be buried? Because certain Rosh Yeshiva wanted to be buried in a certain place, and other Rosh Yeshiva wanted him buried in a different place.
And there was no family.
Was it that he wanted him buried in this place, or that they didn't want him buried in that place?
No, they wanted him buried in each place, and the question is why? What was this all about? So part of this gets to what we're going to appreciate right now, which is we understand, we talked a little bit about the Beis Medrash L'Rabbanim, and we talked a little bit about Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, but now we got to put them together. Because Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg now writes to us, and he says, I have to tell you about our yeshiva and the distinctive character of this yeshiva and what its message was. And so there became this tension about the question of what does he represent? And so whom should he be buried with signifies something about what his legacy is. So this is a very complicated story. To add to the posthumous complicated story, Rabbi Jacob J. Schachter, he published a collection of letters, personal letters, between the Sridi Eish and a non-Orthodox rabbi, Professor Atlas, in recent years, which had caused a tremendous stir. And in a subsequent article, Rabbi Schachter describes that he realizes that it was a mistake to publish these letters because he was connected with one of the Talmidim, close Talmidim of Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, who said that he would not have wanted these personal letters published. So Rabbi Schachter describes in the article that he went to the kever of the Sridi Eish to ask Mechila. But this is all part of the complicated nature of the Sridi Eish and what he represented and what his life story was. It's not just the simple, he was a great genius and he rode off into the sunset. He didn't have a child. He didn't have many Talmidim. And his world was destroyed. He was lonely. He was broken. He had a broken marriage. Everything that I can imagine as a young man, he was the pupil of the eye of the Slabodka Rosh Yeshiva. And it didn't exactly turn out that way. So what do we have left? We mentioned last week the phrase Zecher Tzadik Levracha. So when we mention this Tzadik, it's a bracha for us because we have the tshuvas of the Sridi Eish, which are just one fragment of what was before. Some of these tshuvas are from afterwards, but that's... So he says, I'm going to write you these tshuvas. His goal is a little different than ours. His goal is to educate us, as he's going to tell us, about what that world was. So what that world was, meaning on two levels. One was, what was the world like? So the first section of tshuvas deals with the laws of Shechita. What particular challenge in the world of Shechita? A huge halachic conundrum that faced Jews in the 1930s.
Did he write tshuvas post-war?
He did write tshuvas post-war. Some of them are here. Was about government legislation about stunning animals before they were slaughtered. You know, for what, you know, humane purposes, also known as trying to persecute Jews. So he says, I write these tshuvas so you should understand what were we going through. You should know. And through this, you get a window, we get a window into the great goyness, the godless of this incredible, unbelievable Talmud Chacham. And then he says, I write you not just to understand the milieu in which we were living, but also that you should understand what we were all about in this Beis Medrash L'Rabbanim. And for us, living in this time, in this place, in our world, this speaks to us. And you'll see why. At least it speaks to me. And it gives us an opportunity to pull ourselves up and say, we have something great to aspire to, and we have something to be proud of. So he says, let me tell you. He says, number 40, line 40. It says, you should know, our Beis Medrash was established Nosad al Yedei HaRabbeinu HaGadol Hagon Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer. What was the purpose of this Beis Medrash? It was not originally a Beis Medrash LaRabbanim. It was not meant as an institute for training rabbis, community rabbis, which ultimately it became. He says the goal was, it was L'Shem, he says, it was L'Shem Chinucham V'Gidulam V'Hachsharasam Shal HaMisadim LaRabbanos. But, oh, you're right, it doesn't say it here. But in the other article, it points out that the original concept was to create an intellectual hub for German Jews. Meaning, Germany is the seat of, the heart of the Enlightenment, of the reform movement, of all the ideas of acculturation and assimilation and Wellhausen and all of these revolutionary concepts. So if Israel Hildesheimer originally, according to this article, this other article, the Berlin Rabbinical Seminary, wanted just to get Jews together in a place where they could learn so that they could have an intellectual conversation. Because what was going on was that the prominent Talmidei Chachamim were in small centers, most of them in Eastern Europe, and they didn't have any interaction. So you have lots of these German Jewish intellectuals who are not religious and anti-religious or a-religious, but no one is engaging them. No one is demonstrating to them that the Torah has something to say. But then it became clear that it's going to be focused specifically on what Rav Weinberg says here was on training Rabbanim, specifically with this initial concept, which is the following. So first he tells you about Rav Israel Hildesheimer, and he tells you that he was in Hungary, in Eisenstadt. Go to the next page. And first he started this, what he calls this original concept of the Trias HaDatis, that was in general, the purpose was, top line of B, Lahachzir Ateres Hayados V'Tiferes Chayam Asoros HaKadosh HaLiyoshnon, to bring back the pride of traditional, what we would call today, Orthodox Judaism, which was at that time under siege in Germany. Achar Kach Yosar is based Medrash HaGadol LeTorah U'LeTeuda, and he stood it at the head of it V'Amad Beroshu Kol Yimei Chayav. And he describes now, like we said earlier, about how he was a Talmud of Rav, the Talmud of the Aruch Laner. He was also third line Bal Haskalah Mados Makifa. He was secularly educated, higher education. Rav Israel Hildesheimer. By learning line number four, Makoros Hayados Beion Velimud B'Shasu Poskim. Ra es ha'aruva b'yoser b'tucha l'hachzaras tiferes hayadus l'kadmusa. He said, you know how we're going to bring back Orthodox Judaism from being trampled on and diminished by the Reform? Is by going back to the learning of Shas and Poskim. Back to the Torah, the pride of the Torah. But not Torah only. Torah in a way which can address the issues of the day. So he says, Ora hamavrik shel hayados hamakoris, the light of authentic Judaism. And this is crucial. You know, if the central motif is not traditional Shas and Poskim, it's not Rav Hildesheimer, it's not Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, it's not Torah true Judaism. That's not the future. If you water that down, then you don't have Yiddishkeit. But he says, I'm on line five. That's Titches Azora Chitzoni Shal Tabus Haropis Hachadasha. Avo line six. Who darash mi talmidov shebal yaznichu es ha'avoda besoda chochmas Yisrael al yisoda sambesora. He says, in addition to that, you also have to be familiar with the knowledge that's going on in the world. To be educated, generally speaking. You have to stand, as he says on line number nine, Lamod Bifnei Ha'olam Ha'gadol, to stand in front of the big world, even the non-Jewish world he's alluding to. Ulahochiach Tzidkas Hayados V'Amitiyus Ha'nitzchius Bifnei Hamada Ha'chiloni. You have to be able to stand in front of secular Jews and speak intelligently about the eternal values and the mission and the vision and the relevance of Torah. Kenosei Dvar Hashem, he says, on the Rabbonim, Kenosei Dvar Hashem, lahasbir, to explain line 10, la'olam, la'am v'la'olam, es das hayados al kol habayos shel hamusar, to deal with ethics from a Jewish halachic masorah perspective, shel hamishpat, justice, v'shel hatikun hasotziali shador hachadash mitchabet bahem. This bitui is almost reminiscent of Rav Kook type of descriptions. Dealing with contemporary social issues, address them. Aleim laharos, it's on the rabbis to demonstrate ki ein hayados osef shel chukim uminagim datiyim belvad. It's not like just a collection of religious principles. Ki im koach ruchani, it is a spiritual power, machriya b'chayei ha'enoshiyut, that is it's defining and guiding in a human condition, in the life of a human being. Umuvan, he says, therefore, you have to have an acceptable, intelligent answer to every question. Rav David Zvi Hoffman wrote a whole treatise about biblical criticism, explaining, not ignoring biblical criticism, studying biblical criticism, and explaining the answers to Wellhausen's proofs. Now look at 9:13. Bahadgasha miyuchedes hera hagon Rebbe Israel Hildesheimer al chashivus hadrasha bebatei kneses v'al hakosher lohofa pumbis. Rebbe Israel Hildesheimer said it was very important for the Talmidim to learn how to give a drasha, to how to speak publicly, intelligently, in a compelling fashion. That's unique. In Eastern European yeshivas, where Rav Yechiel Yaakov Reinberg was raised, there weren't classes on homiletics or public speaking. Zicharon Ola Litova, I'll mention my teacher, the late Gerald Oliver Shalom, Gerald August. You know, he taught me everything I know. And then his successor, Brent Baer, still is involved in the kol every year. YU sends us for a whole day. Somebody who comes, works with the Chavri HaKolo. We practice eye contact. We practice modulating our voice and all the stories. Gerald Oliver Shalom. They didn't have Gerald August. Gerald was very involved in Toastmasters. He was a gadol in Toastmasters.
Sorry.
That's good. So they didn't have that in Slabodka. But in the Beis Medrash LaRabbanan they did. Because he says, how are you going to educate the people if you don't have a way to communicate with them? You have to have an effective communication style. So he says, and therefore, line number 14, he explains, L'drasha v'l'na'um, for a drasha, for a sermon, for a talk, yesh hashpa'a gdola, there is great influence. To be able to get up and give a proper drasha, b'dor shel ta'amulat savchanis, in a I don't know how to adequately translate Sata'aluma Tzavchanis, especially in today's Twitter rage, you know, so much confusion and screaming and yelling and ideas and back and forth. To have a rabbi who is a Yodea Sefer, a Talmud Chacham, who's rooted in the Masorah, whose primary focus in his Avodas Hashem, in his Shas Poskim Yir Shemayim Avos Yisrael, and still be able to articulate something, he says, that is going to have an impact on people. You're starting to see why this is very relevant for us and why I think this is important. Just saying. He says, EF shall line number 14, L'rav b'yameinu, you can't have a rabbi today, L'ishtamet u'lihiskavetz b'keren zovish sholcheinu limudav, to just sit in the corner and learn. Now, parenthetically, it doesn't mean that what Rav Azrul Hildesheimer and what the Sridi Esh are saying is that there is no place for such a yeshiva. There is a place for such a yeshiva. One of the articles documents how one of the Bachrim, or the Avrechim, the Rabbonim, who graduated from the Beis Medrash Rabbonim, Rav Weinberg said to him, oh, you should go now and learn, I don't remember where he told him, Lomzhe or Kletsk or Voloshin, or I forget where he told him. He says, you go to Eastern Europe, because that's the wellspring. But there's also a place for something else. It's not an either-or proposition. There's a place for both. There needs to be respect and appreciation for both. And depending on your goal, you may need to emphasize one over the other. So he explains weiter. He says, Olav Limtso Nisiv, line 16, Lalev Hanoar Hamiskadel, to the heart of the young people, Umeschanich Babate Sefer Chiloniim, to speak to secular kids. Remember, what is raging, and at this point in the 1920s, devastating Eastern European communities, including Hasidic communities, secularism, all kinds of isms that are drawing young people away from Yiddishkeit. So there is an open question. And I don't have an answer, and I don't know if sociologists have an answer. I don't know if the Rebbe Shlomo has an answer. It's an interesting historical development that obviously has a hashgacha pratis. In a certain sense, the Eastern European yeshivas, from which he was a product as a gaon, they created the elite of the elite of the Talmidei Chacham and the Baalei HaMesorah. But there's an open question, and I don't know the answer, and there's a lot of discussion in these articles, as you can imagine. Is what was the effect of that model on the Hamonam? Versus a German model of Rav Israel Hildesheimer, and then a similar but different in certain nuanced ways Rav Hirsch model, did it produce as great Talmidei Chachamim? That's a question. But did it affect the communities in a different way? Was it more successful in maintaining the integrity of Jewish tradition among the average ordinary person? That remains to be seen. That's an interesting question.
And there was a need for both.
So that's the observation. And I'm just pointing out that even when you talk about the relative value of each model, each one has an element that distinguishes it, but it also comes with a hazard.
Right.
So if it's only one without the other, then you run the risk of being out of balance. And maybe it enables us, and that's part of what we're realizing, is that this tells us something about the life that we're trying to lead today. That we need different kinds of models. And that if you look at, let's say, our community and our kolel following in the ways of the Sridi Eish, you could see how we have a Masora, and we have an important role to play, and so does the Telz Yeshiva, which is distinctly different. And that we both have a role to play in the development of ourselves and our communities and the future of Klal Yisrael. Yeah, it's one ahead of heart. Yeah, this is
Leonard. So do you know who came to my mind just now when you were speaking, Rabbi Grant?
I don't, okay. But you'll have to tell me.
Because I know your sound too. And many of us in the room were fortunate enough to have children at Ida Crown when he was a teacher there. May his soul rest in peace, Rabbi Eugen.
Oh, I heard a lot about him.
Who not only was raised in that world, but did exactly that for the community in terms of how he taught our children. Larry continued to learn
yes.
with him even when he was in college, and just did all that. And because he was raised in that world, you know, I'm a child of survivors, I think that what you said earlier about people, I think, get lost sometimes in all the media about the Holocaust and everybody in the striped pajamas, because it was all that.
Right.
The world in Eastern Europe before the war was really all that.
Yeah, so just to pick up on that point, for those who didn't hear, there was a Rav who was here in Chicago, who obviously I didn't know, but I've heard a great deal about, and in a certain sense, I think there are aspects of the story that I heard about Rabbi Eugen that mirrored this
exactly.
kind of story, because he didn't have any children. I believe he was
yes,
never married.
Never married.
And
exactly.
his Talmidim were like his children.
We were his children.
Where did he learn? He learned in the near, somewhere he learned
in
Lita.
Yeah.
We were his, and we always remained. If you were a Talmid of Rabbi Eugen, you were always his child forever.
Yes.
That's how he touched us.
And he was
with
very
love,
young when he was...
And with love, with incredible love and a heart that you knew what that heart had experienced. And we were like a reincarnation of, if you will, of everything that transpired before. It was amazing.
So this is a person, you know, Dvrayim Heimim Zichronim. I know that Rabbi Lazovsky published a book in his memory talking about his stories and some of the Chidushei Torah they published in another volume. You know, we could go on and on. There's
many
so many.
Tell me to name their children. Yeah,
I was just because
he never had any. He never had any children.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So let's. We don't have so much time. So in the last few minutes that we have, he says, he explains to us this idea that it's important for us. Line 17, Hu tzarech ladas es hamisrachish svivo ba'olam hamada v'hasifrus. A person needs to be acquainted with what is going on in the world, what's going on in society, what's going on in the world of ideas. We need to know what's going on so that we can engage them. As zermi haruach haholchim u'mischad shemitkufa l'tkufa. He's talking, again, sounds to me very interestingly similar to ideas of Rav Kook in Ma'amar Hador and other places. You have to know what the trends are in society. We have to know what they are. We have to be conscious of them, educated about them. Some of them are in consonance with our values and some of them are in conflict with our values. But if we don't know what they are, how are we going to educate people about them? How are we going to navigate them? We have to know. And he says, below achshara shitchis, below yedias sfas amachshava modernis lo yuchal limtzos and esivis hamaga nafshi lo olamo apnimisha lanor v'shal bnei adar chadash. You want to reach the kids today? You want to be able to educate them and inspire them? You have to know what's their world. What's going on out there? He doesn't say you have to be, you know, all into that. You don't have to sign up for that. But you have to know. You have to know what the issues are going on out there. And so from this, he says, Mibain, in line 28, Mibain, intelligentsia zos, from this intelligentsia, tzrichem hayalotzeis rabbonim mukhsharim latudasam lahoyer esayados. They're going to enlighten the world. And they did. Line 32, he says, kemat b'chol ore hasode, rabbis started sprouting up all of these, and Rav Azriel Hummus Behem became like Western Europe's Rashka Bahag. Nothing happened without him. And he goes to name all these different rabbis in different communities, and he says they're not the only ones. If you go back to Rav Sadia Gaon, Rav Ibn Ezra, the Rambam, these were people who all straddled both worlds, and that's what we're trying to accomplish. And then he concludes this paragraph with, if you know who the real Rosh Hashiva was after Rav Azriel Hildesheimer, you know it was Rav David Zvi Hoffman. And anybody who knows anything, he says, knows Rav David Zvi Hoffman was a great Gaon. And so he's now circling back to say, this is a long continuum. It started with Rav Sadia Gaon and the Rambam, and it ends with Rav David Zvi Hoffman. And he says, it happens to be, as you know, after, you can't exaggerate enough about Rav David Zvi Hoffman, like Rav Azriel Hildesheimer. He says, after he passed away, you know that, unfortunately, next page, Rav Avram Elia Kaplan became the Rosh Hashiva, and when he passed away very young, all right, they were stuck with somebody, they had to call me. That's what he says. Line number 6. I'm going to sit on the chair of the Rav David Zvi Hoffman, the Malamed Lol of Rav Azriel Hildesheimer. Who am I? Shein ani roi. Line number 7. Lachavas das lachria. But I couldn't get out of it. I had to take it. A, because of the nature of the people, and B, because of the calling. And so he says, this sefer is the pre-amal of my efforts in learning and in teaching. Because now, as the Rosh Rabbanim LeBeis Medrash Rabbanim in Berlin, so he's getting shilas from all over communities in Germany and beyond, and he's giving shurim to the Talmidim, and he's dealing with all kinds of complicated halachic and yanim, and so he says, specifically, we're dealing here now, you should know, before the war, we were dealing with the issue of shechita, so we have a whole bunch of tshuvas on shechita. And then, I have other tshuvas to other rabbis and communities that were going on in Germany. Go down to line 23. I gathered together my tshuvas that I wrote to people in Germany and other places. Ruba nichtavu b'shnos sheirusi k'ravu mori b'beis medrash l'rabbanim b'Berlin u'mi'utan la'achar shechrui b'ezra shem ma'asari. Some of them are written afterwards in Montreux in Switzerland. I did what I could. He says, look at line 29. This is a shtickle humility, but it's also a light into what he's accomplishing, and this brings us back to the beginning of this year, which was the question. What happens when you have a sefer that's written for a particular purpose? This is what it is. He says, B'sifri, line 29, Kunsu af mechtavim she'im b'em lo akira sarim v'lo chidushim gedolim. Shino, in this sefer, there's some letters, not such big chidushim, not such amazing insights. Avol yesh b'hem mishum zecher hayamim. It just reminds me of the old days. Yimei shalva upricha, the days of quiet, of flourishing, and also yimei mitzuka v'dikon, the days of the straits and the depression. And those days that I had the opportunity, shebehem zachisi l'shevez al kisi ha'rosh al gedol Yisrael. And now it comes to what we started with. V'ulai, line 31, yisham shu gam ke'ein ri'i. It will be as if to be a looking glass. L'shikuf ha'chayim ha'datiyim, into the religious lives, v'hatziburiyim, and the communal lives, shel kihilos Yisrael ba'ashkenaz. The German communities, asher, that most of them, unfortunately, are gone. And people should see the Dor Haba, our generation, what it was like to be a spiritual leader in Germany. Line 33. Asher b'yosho libam, that these rabbis serving in different communities, shepama b'nafsham, ozru she'eris kochom lishmal gachelas hayados. They did whatever they could to maintain the integrity of Yiddishkeit, despite the incredible, insurmountable challenges. B'tzoka isim. And then he says, v'rayon levai mifayim b'libi, in line 35. Maybe there's another little idea in my heart. Talmidei beis midrashenu, the Alumni Association of the Beis Medrash L'Rabbanim. I don't think they had such a thing. He said that the alumni of our yeshiva, of the Beis Medrash L'Rabbanim, they were scattered all over. They went to different communities, different places in the world. Ula yeshamish lem sefer zeh, me'ein kesher v'igud. Maybe this will make us feel connected to each other. Think about who's writing, and when he's writing, and what he's feeling. This is a man who's broken and alone. So he says, I'm going to write you a sefer of unbelievable chidushei Torah. And I want you to take the sefer and feel connected to all of us who are Talmidim in this yeshiva. The yeshiva that's gone, and the Talmidim who were destroyed and incinerated and burnt without a kever. He says, but we can still feel together. Maybe somebody will pick up the sefer in Paris, and somebody else will pick it up in Sarajevo. And they'll remember that we're together. He says, "Me'in kesher v'igud mitoch zichron hayamim harishonim." Line 36. Shabehem hayu hakshurim v'hadukim lebeis midrashenu v'hashra'aso ruchanas hayisti yakar be'inam. And therefore, he says, line 37, "Beis midrashenu." And you see how this introduction to the sefer is so rooted in the institution, in the worldview, and we're going to carry that along in our lives today. Today, us, we. He says, "Beis Midrashenu Agodol Chorev Bavunaseinu Harabim." Parenthetically, you should know, in the last couple of years, they actually reinstituted a new version of the Beis Midrash L'Rabbanim in Berlin under the aegis of Dayan Erentroy from England. So there is today a Beis Midrash L'Rabbanim in Berlin. He says, "Avol Zichro Hakadosh Lo Yosaf Mikerev Lev Talmidav." The memory of the yeshiva that we had will never die in the memory, in the lives, and in the heart of its students. Rabbi Mayhem, many of them, Olu L'Gedula, they became great, and they are Mechanim Pe'er Be'orim Gedolos B'chol Rachavei Olam Hayad Yehudi U'mekachim Mefarim Shem Yisrael. Some of you are familiar with Dr. Leo Young from New York City, right here from the Beis Medrash L'Rabbanim in Berlin. So he says there are people all over the world. Really? So he says, these people are all over. They'll never forget what we had that was lost. V'shem Torasenu v'emunosenu v'achirim olu la'aretz ha'kadosh. Some of them went to Israel, upolim, karabonim, kemorim, v'omdim rosh hechinuch hadati, in religious education. And some of them are in the omdim b'shulton ha'mamlachti, v'kulom osim chizuk l'toras Yisrael b'eretz Yisrael. Yehei shmo ha'gadol mevorach. And his last line, yamud nasifri zeh. This sefer should be kematzeva tznu'a, to this as a small, modest monument. Lebeis Mikdash Ma'at, that for that miniature sanctuary, that Beis Medrash, that was a Mikdash Ma'at, Shemeshach Shmonim Shana, that for 80 years, Hefitz Torah Va'ora Lepezurei Yisrael. It illuminated Torah to all those scattered Jews. Halavai, we in our time should aspire to carry on this legacy.